Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, I'm 5'11 in heels, and my upgraded co-host today is Ghostface Milla, a writer at the Roundtable music blog. You can read him and download his weekly mixes at www.theroundtableonline.com. On this episode, we'll be discussing the new comedy Bad Teacher, which stars Cameron Diaz as an unorthodox educator who spends her school year saving money for a boob job, pursuing new substitute Justin Timberlake, staving off the flirtations of PE instructor Jason Segel, and warring with brown-nosy teacher across the hall, Lucy Punch. And I thought I had a lot on my plate.
There she is!
Elizabeth Halsey!
Woo!
I am so excited we're going to be across the hall, mates, but I am so sad it's because your relationship ended.
Who are you again?
Amy Squirrel.
Squirrel?
Yeah, you know. Don't worry, you were kind of a lone wolf last year and so busy planning the wedding.
I found him in bed with somebody else.
Oh my gosh.
It was another man.
Shut the front door.
So, Ghostface, did this movie make you want to be a teacher?
You know, it kind of did in the beginning, because I love watching movies and showing inappropriate movies to children.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, this movie sort of made me want to be a teacher, and I'm kind of terrified as to what that says about this movie, and also what it says about me.
Right.
Even though my parents would be thrilled, or... Actually, they might not be thrilled if they saw this particular movie and knew it was the thing that was responsible for making me reconsider my career, but
right.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Is there something wrong with how a movie called Bad Teacher, about a teacher who is, in fact, pretty bad, makes teaching or bad teaching look fun? Or was this movie not fun for you?
Oh, no, it was totally fun for me. And I think, you know, in a way, I have a few teacher friends. My mom's actually a teacher, so I could kind of, like, relate to Cameron Diaz's character already, and just, like, you know, from the stories that I've heard or situations, and, you know, just how frustrating it can be. And granted, she's teaching at a different level than, like, most of the people that I know that are in high school or whatever, which has its complete own other issues. But yeah, it did make it look fun, you know, like, they mostly focused on kind of the activities and just, like, kind of the weird kids, like, the different kind of tropes and stereotypes of kids in school, but also just how sarcastic she was about everything and how cynical. It made me want to be a teacher alongside her. You know what I mean? Like we would be like partners in crime and be like, can you believe this crap? You know, kind of thing. At like every pep rally or whatever, like just hanging out in the back and like making fun of everything.
For me, I think it's the wish fulfillment slant of this movie that really lured me in at first. Cameron Diaz's character, Elizabeth Halsey, basically just doesn't care, and it's not something she necessarily tries to hide. And I know that people wish they could just saunter into their job and get away with doing what they want, which is, for her, essentially nothing, instead of what they're expected to do, and get away with it. She sees her job as a means to an end, and the end is her getting a boob job, so she'll be able to bag a wealthy husband and pretty much be set for life. And what amplifies the comedy, at least for me, is that her job is teaching. And if this movie was called Bad Convenience Store Clerk or Bad Netflix Call Center Employee, I'd probably zone out, but she's a teacher, and teaching is definitely one job where you're expected to show up and legitimately give a shit every day.
Right, right. Although, to be fair, if you're a Netflix call center employee, you should give a shit. No, but that's, I think that's a really good point. I mean, that's kind of what's so funny about it, you know, and it reminded a lot of critics of Bad Santa, and I think that it's true in the sense, you know, you think of this person that is supposed to be so kind and nurturing and, you know, all that stuff. And really, you know, Santa's like this guy at the mall who's probably an alcoholic or, you know, whatever. Like, they have there's always like a joke about, you know, how messed up the Santas are at the mall and stuff, like on Modern Family and whatever else. But, you know, teachers are supposed to be so revered for, you know, how organized they are and, you know, how caring and, you know, educating, obviously. And Cameron Diaz is just none of those things in this movie. And even, I think, when she does kind of turn, she doesn't turn for the right reasons. So it's still fun to watch. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm sure we'll get into it, but she doesn't have like a come-to-Jesus kind of moment where she's like, oh, man, I need to change my ways. She's like, oh, I just need to switch up, like, the way I get what I want.
Yeah, actually, when you're talking about Bad Santa, I've been hearing a lot about people who say that this movie reminds them of Bad Santa. And it's weird because that completely did not occur to me at all until I read it. But the movie that was in my mind a lot after watching this one was Election.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I thought it was really interesting that that movie has Matthew Broderick as a civics teacher? A math teacher?
Yeah, I think he was civics, or like morality or something, and that's why it was so weird that he, you know, was kind of corrupt.
Yeah, it reminds me of Election, but one of the things that I liked about this movie, and I'm not criticizing Election, because in the context of Election it made sense that Matthew Broderick would be taught that lesson at the end of the movie, so to speak, but there is no lesson here. Like, it doesn't give you consequences that do not turn out well for Cameron Diaz's character, because that's what you kind of expect to happen, and I feel like in a cheaper movie that would happen.
Right, yeah, she never really gets her Hays Act or Hays Code, like, comeuppance. You know, like, she doesn't actually get what she deserves in a justice sort of way. Like, she gets away with it. But also, I mean, you know, it still gives a satisfying ending to the people that want it to end well, you know, and it does end well. But you're never like, that character would never do that. Or you're not forced with, like, a montage of her, like, learning to be nice or anything like that. Like, she still is bad in the end.
Yeah.
I wasn't really expecting that from it. And so when it ended, I was like, wow, like, they handled that really well in that it still remained funny. She was still true to that character. You know, it didn't just end with her being like, you know, F you or whatever, like, and it ended. Like, so it was, it was pretty satisfying.
Yeah, getting back to what you were saying earlier, I want to talk about her curriculum. her curriculum involves showing kids inspirational teacher movies like Stand and Deliver and Lean on Me while she sleeps at her desk. And one of my favorite jokes in the movie is that it sort of suggests that she runs out of inspirational teacher movies really quickly. And she's just showing the movies that take place at least partially in a school setting. Which,
just those scenes?
Yeah, which includes Scream, I guess, because there's that scene where the killer murders Henry Winkler in the principal's office. She has a mini bar in her desk drawer. She smokes weed in the gym when no one's around. And I'm quoting her in case my parents listen to this, because weed is awesome. she essentially takes money from parents in exchange for giving their kids good grades. And she works a student car wash and pockets a lot of the cash because, damn it, she worked really hard turning that car wash into a Whitesnake music video. I'm not going to deny she's an awful person and she's a shallow person, but I think that she's an awful person and she's a shallow person who you can still find funny because the movie just kind of lets her rip. You're never supposed to feel empathy for her or feel sorry for her or even root for her.
Yeah, and even in one of the scenes, I think it's Christmas Day, and she's so frustrated because she can't find a lighter to light her bong. and you know, there is that, like, sort of moment where you're like, oh, she's all alone on Christmas Day, but, like, she wants to be alone on Christmas Day. Like, even when one of her students' parents and the student drive up, they're like, oh, is that Miss Halsey? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, you should come over and have dinner with us. Like, you know, you're kind of like, well, she has to go over there because otherwise it would just be weird for her to be, like, sitting alone, you know, as far as the movie goes. And she begrudgingly goes over there. It's just funny, like, the way that it happens, because you're not like, oh, that poor lady, you know, you're like, she wants to do that. She wants to be sitting at home smoking pot on Christmas Day by herself.
Yeah. I want to kind of stack Bad Teacher up against a movie like Bridesmaids to elaborate this point. I think in our Bridesmaids Scorncast, I went on far too long about the scene where Kristen Wiig bakes and decorates this solitary cupcake. But it's a scene where you're supposed to, you know, feel sorry for that character because of her failures in her professional life and her personal life. And I'm not saying that empathy is unearned by the writing or Kristen Wiig's performance. But then you have a Bad Teacher and you look at Cameron Diaz, who is completely and delightfully brazen in this role. And I would say that this movie's equivalent of the Bridesmaids cupcake scene is a scene set on New Year's Eve where we observe her spending the night watching Ryan Seacrest alone on her couch, and she's dipping a corn dog straight into a jar of mustard. And the thing about that scene that's so genius is you're not invited at all to feel sorry for her.
No, not really, yeah.
And in fact, I'd say you're supposed to laugh at her. I think the key to that scene, and a key to a big part of the movie's charm, is that she's actually not feeling sorry for herself either. She's completely okay with being alone on Christmas or on New Year's Eve with a corn dog.
Right.
she knows at that point in the movie, she knows that she's going to get her new tits and her rich husband, and everything's going to be all right eventually. So in other words, this movie taught me a lot about perseverance.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it's funny that you bring up Bridesmaids, because I thought, you know, the same way as far as, like, you know, a female-fronted comedy that kind of has a lot of, you know, gross-out or kind of adult, like, vulgar moments that you wouldn't necessarily think. You know, and this one, it reminded me of The Sweetest Thing in that way, and that, like, there was moments that you weren't expecting, you know, like either Cameron Diaz's character or, you know, even the actress herself going through it, but of course she has a really good sense of humor and, like, most of the stuff she's been in. But it did remind me of Bridesmaids in that there wasn't that scene where, you know, the cop is like, bake with me, and Kristen Wiig's character is like, whoa, what? You don't even know me, you know, she kind of flips out. That scene that you, I think, didn't like, that kind of took you out of the movie.
Yeah.
And that you thought was like kind of like just poorly written or thrown in there for the audience's sake, which I actually agree with, but I just happened to enjoy that scene. But it didn't have that, and I think that's why it ended up being so satisfying, because it would have felt disingenuous, you know, or unauthentic to have that scene in there, like somebody else told them, we really need this, you know, like focus groups couldn't relate to Elizabeth Halsey or something like that. And it's like, it's not about that. Like, it's about just, you know, the character actually believing this. And I think that's what was good about it, is that, you know, she only did things that, like, she believed, and that she, you know, she really didn't feel that sorry for herself. She was like, I'll get married eventually, you know, or whatever she wanted.
Yeah.
And I think that was good to see, because it's not a lot of movies that do that. They usually get a cheap moment towards the end just so it can, you know, be crowd-pleasing. This one was crowd-pleasing in a completely different way that I think was more successful.
Let's go ahead and talk about this ending, because I saw this movie twice, and the first time I saw it, I didn't really know how I felt about the ending, and the second time that I saw it, I have a more concrete feeling for it. We're spoiling it, so she becomes a guidance counselor. How do you feel about the ending?
I liked it. I thought it was funny, you know, and it was one of those things that I was like, I would totally watch a sequel, like Bad Guidance Counselor or whatever it is, you know, because I think that in a way she would be good at it, you know, because she has this way to talk to kids to, like, really just be a straight shooter. And probably a bad way. She's not telling kids they can do whatever they want. She's like, no. You're going to peak in college. That's going to be your time. You know, you're going to be the guy that writes poems and, you know, plays the guitar or whatever. Like, she's telling kids kind of, you know, she's sort of pigeonholing them, which is pretty messed up. But at the same time, she's giving them something, you know, like some sort of vote of confidence that isn't like, you can be a football player if you want, you know, or like any of that stuff. She's kind of being like, this is who you are, you know, and you need to work within this realm. So I didn't mind it. I thought it was better than her just sticking at that same job, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, she was never really that happy with it. So it would have been, you know, somewhat disappointing if she was kind of just like the same old, I don't even know the subject she taught, because she just showed movies all the time. Was it history? I don't even know.
I think literature, because weren't they
reading English? Yeah, literature, right. Yeah, just, yeah. But, because they were talking about To Kill a Mockingbird or something. But yeah, I was like, I don't think she actually wants to be an English teacher. I think she would actually probably look forward to being a guidance counselor. And also, I think it's probably less work for her, you know? Like, kids come in and see her, she probably doesn't have to do something every day, you know?
Yeah, and also, I think deep down, she might be a bad teacher who's antagonistic with the kids in her class, but it seems to stem from a philanthropic place. Like, in her interaction with these children, she's blunt and crass, but she does seem to have their best personal interests in mind. She doesn't go out of her way to have their best personal interests in mind, but when they bring their problems to her and they annoy her with them, you know, it's there. Like, the nerdy guy in her class who just, he will not give up his crush on this, like, Miss Popular, and she tells him that it's never going to happen, and she's right, because it wouldn't happen, even though Hollywood movies don't ever really present you with that reality.
Right, exactly.
And there's a really funny exchange where the obnoxiously smart girl in her class tells her that she wants to be president when she grows up, and Cameron Diaz basically says, if you keep saying shit like that, you're going to get punched.
Yes, yeah. And I love that, too, because it's kind of like, she's saying her, like, yeah, like, you're going to get punched by the other students, but it could totally come off like, I'm going to punch you if you
say
that.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought it was so funny, too. Yeah, I mean, her delivery of a lot of those lines was pretty pitch perfect, I think. You know, and I think in a lot of ways, like, I'm not sure many other actresses could have played this role as well as Cameron Diaz did.
Yeah, and I kept thinking throughout the movie that she would be probably a decent guidance counselor.
Really? That's so funny.
Yeah, it's because in the end of the movie, when she walks into the office, then the closing shot is her walking into the principal's office, and she's walking by this, like, row of children that are sitting there waiting, and she tells one boy, you know, you're up, come on. And they walk into a room together, and as she's shutting the door, I thought, please let the door have a sign on it that says, Elizabeth Halsey, guidance counselor, or whatever. And it did. So I got, you know, the exact ending that I was hoping for, and I completely agree with you. If this movie is a huge success, please make a sequel called Bad Guidance Counselor, because...
I know, I would watch the crap out of that.
Yeah, I can definitely stand another 89 minutes of her doing stuff like this.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, it also helped, like, the supporting cast was great. Like, there was really no one that was bad. There were some people that I was like, oh, I don't know if that, like, fits within the movie, but, like, I think Jason Segel was great. He totally fit his character. Justin Timberlake kind of surprised me. You know, I mean, I think his character was kind of so whatever, but he, like, played it in a way that was just so, like, I kind of know people like that, like, people that will just go with the flow and say, like, yes or no to whatever you're talking about. You know, like, I love, my favorite exchange between all of them is when Jason Segel's character is trying to point out, you know, how bland and boring Justin Timberlake's character is, and she's still enamored with Justin Timberlake, or at least trying to seem enamored with him, and she's talking him up about slavery, and she's like, God, wasn't slavery awful? And he's like, oh, it was so awful. And Jason Segel's character comes up and he's like, hey, what do you guys think of sharks? Aren't they awful? And Justin Timberlake's like, oh man, sharks are so bad. They're the worst. And then Jason Segel says, but they're so majestic. And he goes, they are beautiful creatures. You know, and it's just like, you're such a nerd. Like, you just go with the flow about anything. You have really no point of view about anything. And I think he actually played that pretty well, like, for being, you know, who he is. But I will say, I think the person who stole the show was kind of a tie between, and I can never remember her name, but she plays Phyllis on The Office, and the other teacher, the crazy Amy Squirrel. She was great.
Oh, Phyllis Smith is the first one, and then Lucy Punch.
Yeah. And she's actually, I think, British in real life, too.
Which is crazy. I've seen her in enough movies to know that she's actually British, but I keep forgetting when I watch her in films.
Yeah. So. She could have easily, or someone else in that role, could have easily taken it over the top in a way that it wasn't funny. You know, and she bordered on that, but she really made it pretty tempered, like, as far as her over-the-topness. It worked within what kind of teacher she was. And you kind of saw it build up. You didn't, you know, she wasn't crazy right to begin with. And I'm going to say this, like, I want to know what happened in 2008. I want to know, did they say that?
Oh, with her, like, breakdown or whatever?
Yeah. Did they ever explain that?
No, it's just alluded to, like, you don't want another 2008, do you? So.
Yeah. And then I was just like, what? What happened? You know, because, like, and I loved that about it, too, that they were kind of like, this is already a sort of imbalanced person. Like, she's crazy. But all of those people seemed so real. You know, like, I know an Amy Squirrel, and, like, I know probably a Jason Segel-type character. So it was kind of, like, just cool to see them all interact. I wouldn't say they're all typical teacher-type tropes, but they probably exist, you know, at some school somewhere. Like, so I thought that was cool.
I think they should do a prequel about what happened to her in 2008, actually.
Yeah, right? I'd watch it. I'd totally watch it.
And then two sequels. One about Cameron Diaz as the guidance counselor, and then another one where you find out what's going on with Amy Squirrel at Malcolm X High School.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think if there was a sequel, they should definitely do, like, some sort of, you know, crossover between the two schools or something. Because, yeah, I mean, I would watch two sequels, definitely. But it would be great to see them interact again. I think they had a really good rapport, you know, with just, like, her sugary sweetness and how, like, Cameron Diaz played into that. And, like, I know who you are, I got your number, you know, kind of thing. Will you watch my quadrant, you know, in the lunchroom? And she's like, yeah, cover me, you know, like, just, like, being like, you're too goody, you know, you're going to watch my quadrant right now.
I think my favorite nonverbal joke from the movie was the scene where they're sort of having, like, a stare down at each other from across, like, the school parking lot or field or whatever, and Amy Squirrel is wearing, like, a flannel and has a bandana on from where her face was covered up because she had the kids outside and they were taking down a piñata, and she, like, pulls the bandana up from her eyes and it's, like, now over her head and she's wearing, like, a buttoned-up flannel. She looks, you know, like a complete thug, and she's, like, staring across this field at Cameron Diaz, who's wearing, you know, her, like, pretty dress with her nice shoes and her black sunglasses. And I do want to get back to Justin Timberlake and make a point that he's somebody that I see in movies, and I generally just feel like he is so incredibly self-conscious in movies that it kind of always gets in the way of me enjoying his performances. Even in a movie where he got pretty good notices, like The Social Network, there's something about him that his Justin Timberlake-ness is so completely, like, upfront that I always have a hard time watching him in movies. I think he's really successful in things like Saturday Night Live, where he is able to have that air of Justin Timberlake because it's just like a four-minute sketch. But the thing about him in this movie that works so well, because I really, really was pleasantly surprised by him, I think this is one of the first times he's not playing the coolest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works so much to his advantage. And I feel like the casting in this movie is pretty clever, because it would have been so much easier for him to have the Jason Segel role and Jason Segel to have the Justin Timberlake role. Because that's what you kind of expect.
Yeah. And I'm glad it wasn't, because I mean, it ends up being that much, more satisfying in the end, I think. But also, like, you know, when you think about it, like, Jason Segel looks more like a middle school gym teacher. You know, like, Justin Timberlake would be like, I mean, the gym teacher would need to be, like, retooled, you know, if he was. But you're totally right. Like, when you would think about it, you'd be like, okay, so Jason Segel will be, like, you know, the soft, go with the flow, like, nerdy type, and then, you know, whatever else.
I want to say a couple words about Jake Kasdan, who directed this, and he's a comedy director whose aesthetics are sort of in line with what I find funny, so I'm not that surprised that I enjoyed this movie as much as I did, but I really liked Zero Effect in Orange County, and I loved the TV set, and I don't know if you saw Walk Hard, but I think that's one of the most consistently funny comedies in the past 5 years, and another one with a really terrific cast.
I liked it a lot, because it... You know, I think a lot of people wrote that off as just, like, a straight spoof movie, like, almost like another, you know, epic movie or date movie or whatever those, you know, all those stupid vampires suck. Like, it, you know, people wrote it off as kind of one of those. But when I actually saw it, I was like, there's a lot more going on than just, like, we're spoofing the Johnny Cash story or, like, you know, the autobiographical musical artist movie. And it was funny. And John C. Reilly is, I mean, he's brilliant. Like, he's always hilarious.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've seen those other ones, or at least I haven't seen the TV set. Is that the one with Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to see that too, because I think what he does is, or at least in the, what I've known about some of the stuff, is that, like, he parodies things or satirizes things in a way that is, like, accessible to audiences that might not necessarily be in the know, but people who are get all the more out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I know people that will watch Bad Teacher and think it's hilarious because of, you know, the poison ivy on her face and, you know, all of kind of, like, those very obvious kind of, or even some of the physical comedy jokes in the movie, you know, the sex scene. I'll just leave it at that. But then there's all this other stuff, you know, like Stand and Deliver and, you know, watching all of those movies. And I love how every time she says why her and her fiancé broke up, like, the reason she broke up with him keeps getting more and more exaggerated.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny to everybody, but I think people that are, like, really kind of in tune to that stuff just get that much more out of it. And, you know, comedy is not easy. It's hard to do. There's a lot of comedies that are really bad, like all the ones that I mentioned before, you know, Epic Movie and all those. So to see something like this, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like so, like, thankfully, like, this movie was done right.
I do want to just mention the sex scene a little bit and say that it's probably the most awesome sex scene in a movie ever made.
It really is. It really is.
There are a couple things in this movie that I think went a little too far, not necessarily in their content, but in their staging, which has surprised me a little bit, going from Walk Hard and the TV set to this movie. I was a little bit surprised that Jake Kasdan seemed to overplay some of the jokes. I feel like during that sex scene, I was completely there and I was dying laughing, but the way it ends with, I don't want to give anything away, even though we're free with spoilers here, but there's definitely, like, a pan down to a stain on something when the sex scene ends, that I felt like it would have been funnier if you just saw that in a wide shot. He did the same thing during a car wash scene where Cameron Diaz is, like, cavorting wet on top of a car, and there's, like, you see a kid who's, like, standing there completely in awe, and then the camera pans down and you see he's got an erection that's, like, sticking up in his jogging pants. And I feel like there are a couple instances like that in this movie where he doesn't really seem to trust the viewer to see what's funny about a shot, so he, like, closes in on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I guess in that case, or at least as far as the sex scene, I was just so glad that they showed the stain, because I just thought it was all that like, it was just made it that much more funnier.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, they didn't have to be like, gong, here it is, you know?
Kind yeah.
Of, yeah, and there was, you know, there was a few other times, I think, when, you know, when Amy Squirrel's, like, doing that weird lip thing. And it wasn't that long, to be honest. I think I was just kind of like, that was, like, a little bit weird, you know?
She was trying so hard to fight it.
Right, exactly. And then, like, knowing that they never tell you what happened in 2008, I was kind of like, I wish that was shorter, because it only made me want to know what happened in 2008 all the more. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I think there were some parts of it that, you know, they got carried away. They were like, this is too funny. We have to show people this. We have to make sure they don't miss it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good point.
Speaking of which, just in closing, I have a question. What did you actually think about this movie's crudity? And I only ask because it seems like a lot of people on message boards, and even some reviewers, seem to be really hung up on all the four-letter words and saying that that's all there is to the movie. It's weird, and it's hard for me to hear that and not call the sexism card a little bit. Just because when I saw this movie again, I counted all the F-words, and then I went and saw The Hangover 2 again and counted all those F-words. I'm just kidding, I would not see The Hangover 2 again.
I was gonna say.
No, but actually, there are websites where you can find out how many F-words are in a movie, so I did that. And I want to just point out that there were about 35 usages of fuck in this movie, compared to, I think, just over 100 in The Hangover Part 2. And not only, you know, that, but there's so much else in The Hangover Part 2 that you could be offended by. And I wonder if there is some sexism here in that criticism, just because nobody walked out of The Hangover Part 2 going, wow, that was so over-the-top crude.
Right, yeah. And I totally agree with you. I think that's what I loved about it so much, is, like, that's how people talk sometimes.
It, yeah, it is.
Like, it's not... And I don't think that any of them were thrown in there. So the joke was never, oh, fuck! You know, like, that wasn't the joke. The joke was, like, just fucking smoke this joint because weed is awesome. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And, like, that adds to it in a way that makes it more real. It doesn't make it funny that she's cussing. It's funny because she sounds like she means it. You know what I mean? And I think, so I totally understand what you're saying, and I completely agree with you. And, you know, movies like this and movies like Sweetest Thing and even Bridesmaids, which I don't think had, you know, much cursing in it, but...
I think Bridesmaids had 20 F-words, because I did check.
Yeah, like, but yeah, it didn't have a ton. Like,
no, no.
I think anyone would have left that and be like, that was a lot. But, you know, people aren't expecting that. And there was actually a big kind of hullabaloo about Bridesmaids after it came out, because it has a little bit more gross-out comedy, you know, that we spoke about on the Scorncast. But I think, you know, people need to get over it, and it definitely should not stop anyone from seeing this movie or anything. And I consistently think of Sweetest Thing, mostly because Cameron Diaz is in it, but that movie surprised me because of the way that they promoted it and then what it actually ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
I loved what it was. I didn't like how they framed it, because it just looked like another romantic comedy. But then when I saw it, I was like, this is almost like There's Something About Mary Part 2, and kind of for women, but men can like it too, kind of thing. But really, it was pretty universal. But, like, I mean, there's a lot of gross-out humor in that, and I think Bad Teacher is kind of, like, carrying that torch. And even Bridesmaids, too, I think, is carrying that torch of, like, everyone is like this. It's not a male-female thing. If you want to judge it like that, you're just being close-minded. Like, you know what I mean? Like, comedy is funny, universally. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's not funny that, like, a woman is saying the F-word, or a grandma is saying the F-word. It's funny because of, like, the delivery, or, you know, like, the actual joke about it.
So, what grade would you give Bad Teacher?
I'd probably give it, like, an A-. Like, I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I would give it an A-, too.
Nice.
In other words, I totally fucking agree with you. And that's going to do it for another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Milla for stopping by. Thanks to Bug for our theme music. And just a reminder, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, and you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. I gotta go. I got a scratched copy of the Paul Lynde Halloween special in the mail yesterday, so I have to call Netflix now and sort this out. G-g-g-gulp!